Mama, Messiah. He is Hussein Obama, he is Lord and Savior. He puts his pants on two legs at a time. This is a continuation of the previous edition of Stating the Obvious. I'm going to roll into this with a little bit more about Obama's inauguration from the Collegian. Oh, because you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, moan. Dig in your heels and hold on tight. You can shove your opinion up your ass. That way Obama's cock has something to keep it company. Either you are wrong or I am right. And most likely what's really going on here is it's a combination of the two. See, you are wrong and I am right. We are here today in the recording studios of the Cynical Libertarian Society to spread the word of anarcho-capitalism, to spread the word of freedom, of property rights, and of non-aggression. I am the Great One himself, and this is Stating the Obvious, the weapons platform from which I launch the nuclear-tipped cruise missile of my intellect that homes in and destroys stupid motherfuckers all around the world. I like that little after blast. And if people survive, and they usually don't, usually they cry, but if they survive, we mow them down with the M60 machine gun. Should upgrade to a 50 cal. That would be more useful. In the control room is the lovely and adorable Randy. She's over there monitoring things, keeping me on track. I am, of course, the Great One himself. Cynical Libertarian Society is on the internet at cynlibsoc.com. You can send us feedback. You can send us your love mail. You can send us your hate mail. You can send us naked pictures of yourself. You can send all that stuff to God. That's G-O-D, dog spelled backwards, God, at cynlibsoc.com. All right. In the previous edition, I went out talking about Obama's inauguration and some quotes that were mentioned here in the Collegian, which is the student newspaper of Colorado State University, which is what I'm currently making fun of, CSU and the Collegian. And I have a feeling that we're going to get into an actual third podcast in this series. Randy's not happy about that, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're happy or not, okay? You need to just roll with punches, all right? There's this great quote here right at the top of the article that I neglected to read. This is great. Now remember, I went out in the last one, this Obama quote from the inauguration, quote, "Preserving our individual freedoms ultimately requires collective action," unquote. And I was talking about what the fuck kind of collective action can this motherfucker possibly be talking about? What does this mean, collective action? Well, here's another quote from the inaugural address that gives us an idea of what he's talking about. Quote, "We do not believe that in this country freedom is reserved for the lucky or happiness for the few. The commitments we make to each other through Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, these things do not sap our initiative, they strengthen us. They do not make us a nation of takers, they free us to take risk that make this country great," unquote. Okay, the commitments we make to each other. Now, I have not, okay, the Medicare, the Medicaid, the Social Security, all that money, all the money I've contributed to those things has been taken from me by force. At no point have I opted in to those things. At no point do I have the opportunity to opt out of those things. The quote-unquote commitments we make to each other, for a group of people, two or more people, to make commitments to each other, for those commitments to matter, those commitments have to be voluntary. When somebody comes to you and says, well, you're going to pay into Social Security whether you like it or not, and if you don't, we're going to come and we're going to take the things you own and sell them and use that money, and if you don't start paying into Social Security after that, we're going to come and we're going to put you in prison, and if you resist going to prison, then we're going to kill you. Okay, that is not a voluntary commitment. That is not a commitment that I or anybody else has made. Okay, in order for you to make a commitment to somebody else, you have to have an option of not making that commitment. There has to be an element of voluntarism in there. You have to be willing and wanting and desiring and freely of your own will enter into the commitment. Nobody has made a commitment to each other through Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. People do these things because the government, the state, forces them to do these things. And this does not make us, no, this does make us a nation of takers. This nation is currently based entirely on taking. It's based on the redistribution of wealth. It's based on using the tax code and things like Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security to take money from people who are earning it and give it to people who are not earning it. It's entirely about taking. The entire political system is about taking. If politicians could not take from one group of people and give to another group of people, there would be no point. Without the ability to redistribute wealth, what is the point of the government and the point of the state? That's what it's for. That's what it's all about. Of course, quote unquote, the royal we, are a nation of takers. Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security do not free people to take risk. You're not free to take a risk. You're not free to start a business without a license from the government. You're not free to work for somebody else without having a 9-digit identification number issued to you by the government. You're not free to work for somebody else without paying taxes. You're not free to grow and sell marijuana. Okay, you are not free to do these things and to take these risks. You're not free to do this stuff. It just boggles my mind. I have not watched the entire inauguration or listened to it. So yeah, I don't know. All I know about what was said is what comes from this article, because even though I know I should watch it because there's going to be so much in there to make fun of. Maybe I'll do a cult of personality about that. It would be fun. I just don't have the patience for Hussein Obama and his little fucking messiah maniacs who kiss his ass and have his poster on their wall and wear his t-shirts. All right, on the subject of idiots. Collegian Opinion Tuesday. There is a chick. Her name is Tyanna Slobe, T-Y-A-N-N-A, Tyanna. I'm going to guess that's how that's pronounced. Now, in the previous edition, we talked about racism. We talked about how minorities are to the white elitists who run Colorado State University, how these minorities are simply tick marks, how they're tokens, how they are viewed as being different than, you know, elitist white people, how they need different motivations and they need different encouragement and all this other stuff, and how essentially diversity is racism. Racism is diversity. You can't have the one without the other. All right. Now, this chick here, Slobe, is going to be a lot of fun for me this semester, I can tell already, because after this column, I have another column of hers that I'm going to read. And she's even getting the honor of, I am going to read this entire column because it is that fucking stupid. This chick is so full of shit. It is absolutely mind-blowing. I read this and was just blown away by how stupid this bitch is. By the way, I did that already. Never mind. All right. We're off to a good start. Did I forget anything? Oh, today is still February the 4th, 2013. See, I got the date in. Yes. All right. Oh, all right, sorry. Almost the entire column. We're skipping the first couple of paragraphs. All right, here we go. This is good. An outsider's perspective on language. Now, as I read all of this, keep in mind, and don't worry, there's going to be plenty of comments in between here, but keep in mind, racism and diversity. Racism is diversity. Diversity is racism. White, middle class, upper middle class, college educated elitist look at those of you who are different skin color than them as needing them, as being you know, too stupid to understand things, being too stupid to provide for yourself, as being different in a way that you're motivated by different things, that you as a black person or a brown person, you need different things than white people do for you to learn and in your environment, because you're different from white people. That's why you're a tick mark. That's why you're a token to these people, because you're different. You're different than them. And diversity is celebrating those differences. Remember, that's what diversity is. Diversity is all about celebrating differences. So let's read this. One day, a friend was telling me a story about how he was trying to get to the airport to meet someone, and he didn't have a cell phone, so he couldn't, and he felt dumb. He referred to himself in the situation as being, quote, muy indio, unquote, or very Indian, very Native American. I told him that referring to himself in a situation where he did not have any technology and felt idiotic as a result, as... All right, hold it. Let me hold on. Let me start this over, because I am going to attempt, notice I said attempt, to improve my reading skills so they don't suck quite so much. Also, this is a good example of why you adjust the microphone before you start the podcast. But see, we do things here live, as those of you who have listened to this before know. Right, Randy? All right, here we go. I'm all better now. This is Sloab's column. All right. And I need to mention that she's in Chile when this is happening. So she's in a foreign country. Remember, upper middle class, white girl, college educated, foreign country, Chile. All right, here we go. Whew. Take two. One day, a friend of mine was telling me a story about how he was trying to get to the airport to meet someone, but didn't have a cell phone, so he couldn't, and he felt dumb. He referred to himself in the situation as being, quote, muy indio, unquote, or very Indian, very Native American. I told him that referring to himself in a situation where he did not have any technology and felt idiotic as a result, as Native American, seemed to me like a racist statement given the marginalization of Native Americans all over the Americas. We got into an argument, and he told me that I didn't get it because I am not Chilean and I do not understand the ways of their language and culture. Now, first of all, he's exactly right. Okay, so here it is. First of all, okay, given the marginalization of Native Americans all over the Americas, well, down in places like Chile and stuff, if the people down there aren't Native Americans, if they aren't Native Americans, what the fuck are they? I mean, I'm pretty sure that white people from America are not populating Chile. And what we see here is, it's exactly what he's saying. She is not from his country. This is some little fucking white girl from America who goes to college, who's never had to work for anything in her life. Mommy and daddy are paying for her college education. She's been spoiled and privileged. She goes to another country and they make a statement, oh, I'm muy indiano. And she's like, well, you're racist. It's like, oh, yes, because you as a white girl who went to college at CSU, you have this deep, intimate understanding of other people's culture and language, which allows you to go to their country and pass judgment upon them. And people wonder why there's a negative impression of people from the United States in foreign countries. Do you think, that spoiled little bitches like this fucking cunt going to foreign countries and lecturing people on their language and telling them that they are racist because they use expressions which may or may not, I've never been to Chile, I don't know, but notice I'm not passing judgment on this person for saying he's muy indiano or indio. I'm not the one passing judgment. Oh, and guess what? I don't believe in diversity either. Yet this little cunt who's so up on diversity and tolerance and open-mindedness, she's down here in this foreign country that she doesn't, she's not, I mean, what, she's been there for however long, like, oh, she's so intimately familiar with their culture and their language and the nuances of their culture and their language and who they are. She's down there fucking passing judgment on this person and calling him a racist? Fuck you, whore. I'm going to come to your country and tell you how you should talk because I know better than you. This is it. This is the statist left-wing diversity attitude that comes from places like Colorado State University. I'm white. I went to college. I believe in diversity. I'm going to come to your country and pass judgment on you. I'm going to call you a racist, and I'm going to tell you how you should talk, how you should think, how you should behave, because I'm better than you are. That's your fucking diversity. Back to the column. A few days later, I uploaded pictures to my Facebook from my friend's Pink Floyd cover band show. In one of the pictures, I was scantily dressed, dripping in sweat, my tongue was hanging out, and I was giving the rock and roll signal. Someone left a comment on the picture that read, quote, white trash, unquote. Okay, let me interject here. The reason they left a comment calling that white trash is because that's pretty fucking much white trash. If you go to Wikipedia, I haven't actually tried this. If you're out there right now listening, try it. Go to Wikipedia, type in white trash, and see what kind of picture comes up. I bet it's going to be a picture pretty goddamn similar to that one. I'm from the South, where everybody's poor and everybody's racist, right? I think I know white trash when I see white trash. And I'm telling you, that description she just gave of herself, that's white trash. That's it right there. Okay, anyhow, back to the column. Quote, white trash is something that people refer to each other as all of the time for looking and acting like I was in that picture. White trash is a fairly normal term in our language. Everyone knows what it means, and many people think it is funny to call someone. Over the next few days, I started thinking about it more and more, what exactly white trash means. Wow, she's intellectualizing now. After she's gone to a foreign country and told other people how to use their language and what to think and called them racist, and then after she put a picture of herself on Facebook where she looks like a piece of white trash, now she's going to intellectualize and fucking contemplate her navel about white trash. Generally, the term connotates an image of poor people, people who live in low-income housing, people who come from low-income families, and have higher rates of alcoholism, addiction, and domestic violence. Wow, somebody here sure is making some generalizations, aren't they? Again, you can't have diversity without racism. She's, you know, white trash. Okay, well, yeah, these people are poor, and they have poor opportunities, and they have alcoholism, and addiction, and domestic violence. She's creating all of this shit in her mind. This is all in her mind. She probably doesn't know anybody who's white trash. So she doesn't know anything about these people. So all of this is generalizations she's creating in her brain, such as it is. People who do not have access to quality public education or higher education. People who do not have access to health care. People who are extremely marginalized in American society. Now hold it. First of all, everybody has access to health care because Obama passed Obamacare. Okay, so she's obviously stupid because maybe she hates black people. Because if you think there's people who don't have access to healthcare, why, you must hate Obama. And if you hate Obama, it's because you're racist. Furthermore, how can they not have access to quality public education? The government runs the education system. Our education system is wonderful. It's controlled by the federal government. Are you saying that the public education, that there's schools out there that aren't good? How can that be? They're all controlled by the federal government. Do you hate black people? What do you mean you don't have access to higher education? Obama's giving out school. Anybody can get a school loan. The school loan industry is entirely powered by giving loans for college to anybody who has a fucking heartbeat. under the assumption that they're going to get a job when they get out and be able to pay that shit back, which a lot of you, like this dumb bitch, are going to find out it's not going to work that way when you graduate with $20, $30, $40, $60,000 of school debt and you're working at McDonald's. All right, so what is this bitch talking about? Everybody has health care. Obama passed Obamacare. White trash, by definition, also has to do with race. The phrase refers to Caucasians who are considered less than a stereotypical middle-class white person, hence trash. White trash links certain white people with people of color who are also often considered by society as being less than the stereotypical middle-class white person, suggesting that the worst thing a white person could do is fall into the same socioeconomic category as people of color have historically filled in the U.S. Okay. First of all, white trash has nothing to do with black people or people of color or ticks or minorities or whatever it is you want to call them. Okay, they're white trash. It's a different category, all right? God. This is great. Okay. In their respective context, like those mentioned above, the terms Indio and white trash are very classist and racist. They're also very normal Spanish and English words to the extent that it is difficult for an insider to recognize the social context of their references. However, but remember, dividing people into groups based on skin color and tracking them like statistics and calling them ticks and, you know, pretending as if those people with that different color skin need different motivations and have different ideas than people have another color skin, none of that's racism. Right? Treating people who are not Caucasians, upper middle class Caucasians like you, as people who desperately need your help, because without the help of white people, those minorities, they'd never be able to go to college. I mean, this is what affirmative action is. It's saying to, you know, people who are not upper middle class Caucasians that without us, upper middle class Caucasians, you would not be able to go to college. You would not be able to get into college. You would not be able to stay in college. You would not be able to afford college. You will not be able to get a job. Without us, guilt-ridden upper middle class Caucasians, you would just be nothing. You would be living in the slums and the ghettos, and you'd be on drugs and you'd be shooting each other. It's only because of us, elitist, superior, upper middle class white people who went to college or are currently going to college. We are the only thing between you and barbarianism and complete anarchy in the sense of what people who are not anarchists think anarchy means. See, that's not racist. Nothing. There's nothing racist about going to another person's country and telling them how to use their language and telling them why their culture is wrong and calling that person a racist, even though you don't know jack shit, because the most you know about Chile is what you saw on the fucking Wikipedia page. That's not racist. No. No, spreading your condescending fucking little attitude to other countries and treating people like shit, that's not racist. But when somebody calls you white trash because you posted a picture on Facebook of you looking like a piece of white trash, oh, that's racist. My friend wasn't right when he said that I do not know enough about Spanish and Chilean culture to understand why Indio in that context was a racist and classist comment. In fact, I understand exactly what it means. Why does she understand what it means? Because she's lived in Chile her entire life and is immersed in the culture and actually understands it? No. She understands because she's white. She's gone to college. She's been enlightened by her college teachers, and she's here to tell you that your ideas, if they're different than her ideas, your beliefs, if they're different than her beliefs, your notions of the world, if they're different than her notions of the world, you're wrong. You're wrong, and you're racist, and you need to be silenced, because that's what diversity is. Diversity is making sure that people who don't believe everything I believe are silenced and that they're called racist. That's diversity. However, I think he was on to something. I am too much of an outsider to the language to have the sort of statement seem normal and However, I think that he was onto something. I am too much of an outsider to the language to have that sort of statement seem normal and inoffensive. No, honey, no, you stupid little cunt. The reason your statement was offensive isn't because you're an outsider to the language. The reason your comment was offensive was because it was offensive. Because you're offensive. Because you're a self-absorbed, stupid, little fucking bitch. Because you're going to other people's countries, to other people's cultures, to other people's languages, to other people's ways of life, to other people's entire life experiences, and calling them racist and telling them that they need to do things differently. Because you're fucking self-absorbed. Because it's all about you. This offends, something offends me. So I'm going to label the people who did it. I'm going to attack them as being racist. I'm going to pass judgment on them. Okay, that's not your goddamn place to do, you stupid little cunt. It is far more difficult to notice the harmful and degrading nuances that are normalized in your native language. It is an interesting idea, though, to look at English in its social context from an outsider's perspective. What kind of things do we say every day that feed into racist, classist, sexist, homophobic, and other divides? Oh, I don't know, things like sitting around talking about how we have to increase the percentage of minorities on Colorado State University campus. I don't know, maybe sitting around and dividing people into categories based on skin color, based on gender, based on who they have sex with. I don't know. Gee, do you think things like that might contribute to creating a society where people who don't fit into your particular category of favor are looked down upon? I don't know. Gee, do you think any of that fucking... Do you think going to foreign countries and calling people racist and lecturing them on how to think and how to use their language? I don't know. How much do you think that contributes? What kinds of things do we inadvertently say every day that reinforce discourses about marginalized groups being different? Oh, I don't know. Maybe the idea that minorities need different ways of learning and they need different programs to keep them from dropping out of college and that they need different treatment in order to help them get into college and that they need different treatment in order to get a job. I don't know. Maybe all of those things do. All of those things that you think are wonderful, that you support. Who exactly is benefiting from this sort of language being normalized, and why do we allow such racist and classist things like white trash to exist as normal and harmless comments? Well, gee, I don't know. CSU benefits because the federal government gives them money for diversity training, gives them money based on how many minorities work there. The federal government benefits, all governments benefits, the state benefits. The corporations benefit. What do you mean who benefits? Everybody benefits except the people that are being marginalized. I think that taking a step back and looking at the language we use from an outsider's perspective would yield shocking results similar to my own surprise at my Chilean friend's language. No, I mean, you're a racist bitch. There's no surprise here. There's really no surprise. All right, what's next on this show? Stand by. I am looking out the window. There are potentially hot chicks out there. Now that we're finished talking about that, let me gawk out the window at hot chicks. They were actually only moderately hot. All right. What? No, I don't get out enough. Thanks for asking. God, I did. I know, Randy. I did actually get out yesterday and like socialize with people that didn't involve anything to do with work. It was fucking incredible. I had like a 2-hour conversation with my friend Alex, and it had nothing to do with any of my jobs. It was fantastic. All right, let me flip. Let me get this newspaper under control. God, this technology, man. This old... Who the hell prints shit on dead trees anymore? Oh yeah, the Collegian does. It's great, though. I love it. All right, let's do this before we cruise to the next one. CSU certificates are not real. So now, first of all, let me emphasize that colleges that issue a certificate as opposed to like a diploma or whatever, right? Let me just be, what's the word, honest about this and say I do have no fucking clue what a certificate is or what that means, and I don't give a shit. Here's what I know. And what I know is what's in the Collegian. And it's a college newspaper written by upper middle class white people who are going to college. So everything in this newspaper must be true. Because these are people who go to foreign countries and tell the people there that they're racist because of the language they use. So everything in this newspaper must be true. Okay, CSU certificates not real. State to university, cannot issue them at undergraduate level, must rename programs. After years of campus departments and faculty issuing informal certificates, CSU recently received clarification from the Colorado Department of Higher Education about rules surrounding the use of the term certificate. Ian McGillivray, Assistant Deputy Director for Academic Affairs at CDME, wrote in a letter to the university officials that CSU's undergraduate campus does not have the authority to offer certificates. Only graduate schools, community colleges, and technical colleges can issue formal certificates. Upon hearing the news, many undergraduates expressed confusion, anger, and shock. Quote, I felt this initial shock where I said to myself, that's a huge issue, unquote, said Becky Ewing, senior chemistry major and former director of academics of the Associated Students of CSU. Colorado State University fucked you over. Shock and surprise. It reminds me of a friend of mine was going to Front Range Community College here in Fort Collins to get a bunch of her prerequisites out of the way before transferring to CSU. And CSU was like, oh yeah, you take all these things, they transfer, blah, 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 no problem. So she spent like 3 years there taking all these classes. Comes a transfer to CSU, they're like, oh yeah, those don't transfer. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And like, yeah, those don't transfer. She's like, you told me they did. And like, yeah, so what? They don't transfer. Yeah, CSU is fucking the students over. Here's what, if you're a student at CSU, you need to understand to CSU, if you're a minority, you're a tick mark. If you're a white person, you're just a source of income. They don't give a shit about you, all right? You need to fucking get over it. Now, here's the really funny part of this. Now that we've established that CSU can't issue a certificate, whatever the fuck a certificate is, this is what made me really laugh. There's this little box over here that says, why should I care? The moral hazard we all have is, what happens if an employer looks at a resume and sees the word certificate and then thinks, ah, formal standalone credential offered by the community college. When did you go to the community college? I see no community college on your transcript. What do you mean you have a certificate? So this is the area that we're trying to clarify. What is the right word to use to help a student at the undergraduate level? Okay, here's a reality check. When you give somebody, let's say you're going to graduate from college, CSU, you got 4 years, you've got your degree, whatever. You're going to be applying for jobs. So you're going to give your resume to the guy at McDonald's. The guy at McDonald's is going to look at it. He's going to see it says on there you have a certificate. He doesn't know what a certificate is any more than I do. He also doesn't give a shit what a certificate is. And he doesn't give a shit what college you went to. Most of you who graduated are going to be fucking working at Starbucks, McDonald's, or an Old Navy outlet, okay? Nobody gives a shit that your resume says you have a certificate, but you didn't go to a community college. I have been a hiring authority. I have hired people. Nobody knows what a fucking certificate is except for upper middle class white people who go to college and go to foreign countries and tell people they're racist because they're using their native language, right? Nobody in the real fucking world knows what a certificate is or gives a fuck. This is something that only fucking academia cares about. It's something only academia understands, okay? When you're getting a job at Starbucks, nobody is going to give a fuck. This is not a fucking moral hazard. This is a bunch of people trying to pretend that a certificate from CSU or a not certificate from CSU or that CSU or that a college education is more important than it really is. All right, what's next on this show? All right, oh my God, so that's coming, and I did that. Okay, great, so this file's over here, and this file's over here, yes. All right, we are ready to delve. I'm gonna do the short one first. In the previous episode, we talked about the racism on CSU, the tick marks, the statistics, the tokens, the minorities, the tracking, the way they're treated differently. I presented my theory, which I have presented many times before, which is that all people are simply people, that you can't have racism without diversity, you can't have diversity without racism. So here in the Collegian, the communist newspaper written by stupid little upper middle class white people from Colorado State University who have never had to want for anything in their lives, here is an opinion column by somebody named Holly Meyer. Holly is a junior English major, and Holly, I can tell from this photograph, is not a Caucasian. I'm not going to read all of Holly's column. I'd figure out my brain. It's shutting down, my brain. I am, however, going to read the last two paragraphs right before the clock chimes noon, which it's getting ready to do in 5 minutes. Here we go. Holly writes, quote, "I am not white, I am not black, and I am not a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. I am a person, and so is everyone else. I am a person who is tired of people not treating each other like people. So please, take it upon yourself today. We all have the power to change." Unquote. There it is. Out there among the vast sea of CSU fucking idiots. Every once in a while, across the ocean, you can see this lighthouse of intelligence, this beacon of hope. I am a person, and so is everyone else. I mean, there it is. As soon as you stop fucking having to say, well, I'm Caucasian, I'm Hispanic, I'm Chicano, I'm transgendered, I'm gay, I'm lesbian, I'm one horned, flying purple people eater. As soon as you can stop having to classify people into groups so that you can track them like statistics, so that you can use them to get more federal funding, so that you can use them to say, hey, look, we have a higher percentage of minorities than any other department in the college. Go us. As soon as you stop looking at other people as things that you can categorize so that you can get more money or you can feel better about yourself, as soon as you stop being that fucking stupid and that fucking motivated by hatred and that fucking racist, as soon as you realize I am a person and everybody else is a person and you behave that way, everything's fine. Holly can do this, apparently. Most of you can't, because you're so stuck in this notion that people have to be categorized. This thing you see on campuses, we see it here at CSU, where people are like, well, how do you identify? You know, I'm like, what the this has always just fucking just been abhorrent to me. People going, well, I identify as transgender. I identify as gay. I identify as straight. You know, you mean like the Nazis identified the Jews by making them wear fucking stars in public and shit. I mean, what is this identify shit? I identify as a fucking person. And I identify everybody around me as either an anarchist or potential anarchist, a person, or I identify them as a statist. That's the only breakdowns I see, and these breakdowns don't have anything to do with who you fuck, who you suck, what color you are, what gender you are, or anything else. They have to do with your beliefs and the way you treat other people. When you go around and you go to people's countries and you tell them they're racist and tell them how to use their language, you're a fucking statist. When you support the government that murders people in foreign countries with flying robots, you're a fucking statist. Okay? When you believe in the non-aggression principle and respect other people's property rights, you're an anarchist. It's that simple. It has nothing to do with what you look like, what gender you are, who you fuck. It has entirely to do with the way you behave towards other people. Except if you're a statist, you don't see people as people. You see them as rich people, or Caucasians, or poor people, or African Americans, or Chicanos, or ticks, or minorities, or statistics. Okay. Where are we on time? God. I know, I really kind of want to save this. Should I do? No, I'm not ready for that one. All right, crap. You know what? Let's Randy, this will make you happy. Let's cut this one short. Let's end this episode right now. Then let's gear up and let's do the next one, because the next three things are all intimately related and there's no way in hell I'm getting these in 10 minutes. So this will be a short episode. Randy, play the outgoing music. Let's do this. Boom. Yep, you got to keep both in sight, baby. I'm always right. All right, tune back in. Next episode coming up. Are you ready to hate me? No, really, you're going to hate me. No, keep rolling, because I just found something I can fill the last 10 minutes with. It doesn't matter that we just played the outro music. This is my fucking show, I can do whatever I want. Okay, Randy hates me now, but it's okay because I can deal with it. I like being hated. The more I'm hated, I always believe that you can judge a person not only by who his friends are, but also who his enemies are. Yes, I know, we love each other. Via LinkedIn, I got a link to this article the other day because we just finished talking about college and certificates and all this other stuff. I got this link to this article written by some guy who wrote a book about how great college is. And the gist of the article is how important it is to go to traditional college, because we can't supplant college with all the opportunities on the internet and home learning and all this other stuff, because there are things that college can offer. I want to read this because I think this is, well, pathetic. This is an excellent example of somebody who is, on one hand, completely oblivious to the realities of what happens when you go to college and what the college environment is and everything else, and also completely oblivious to the world that's changing, and also somebody who is essentially just stumping for the state and stumping for the status quo and is absolutely terrified of change because this person has no idea what to do with it. Let me just read this for you. Just look at the life of Michael Bloom. Oh, should I say, does it say in here who this guy is? Did I print that part out? Nope. All right. Anyway, just look at the life of Michael Bloomberg. As described in a story earlier this week in the New York Times, Bloomberg was, quote, a middling high school student from Medford, Massachusetts, who had settled for C's and had confined his ambitions to the math club, unquote, when he arrived at Johns Hopkins University in the early 1960s. By the time he left, quote, he was a social and political star, unquote, that set him on the path to eventually start the company that bears his name and made him a billionaire. Okay, first of all, remember, we're supposed to hate rich people. So we're supposed to look at this guy because he was a social and political star, and he's a billionaire. Well, aren't rich people what we're supposed to be hating? When you go to college, you're taught to hate rich people because rich people don't pay their fair share. and they're destroying the environment, and they hate Obama because he's black, and they don't believe in tolerance and diversity and open-mindedness like you do. So that when you go to foreign countries and tell people they're racist for using their own language. Okay, in the Times article, Bloomberg, now the mayor of New York City, a person who is responsible for the death and the murder and the imprisonment of who knows how many people, a massive statist, a person who uses laws and regulations and police officers and military and court systems to kill people who do not obey the state. The mayor of New York City talked about his love for Hopkins in very personal terms. Quote, "I just thought I'd died and gone to heaven," unquote, he said. This week, Bloomberg donated $350 million to his alma mater, bringing the total amount of his donations to $1.1 billion. Bloomberg's story exemplifies the power of a residential college experience for 18-year-olds and what happens when an elite college like Hopkins takes a chance on an applicant. While I don't believe that the top colleges take chances on students like they once did because of their desire to constantly admit a better class, okay, I don't believe that colleges offer opportunities to people like they used to because they only want to let in a better class. No, but wait, I thought the colleges were these hotbeds of diversity and tolerance and affirmative action. I thought the minorities were, you know, the tick marks and the tokens were just coming in and they're getting educated and all this other wonderful stuff. All right, but the transformative power of a college still exists today for those able to find the right fit and afford ever-increasing tuition prices. I thought Obama was going to make everybody get a free college education. Oh, wait, he's just going to make you take out a loan. Now, here's the important part of this. That was just a warm-up. Here's what a campus can do better than the alternatives, at least for now. A maturing experience. Let's face it, most 18-year-olds are not ready for the working world, and some are not even ready for a college campus. The 4 years of college turn adolescents into young adults, and through the campus experience, living with different people, participating in activities and athletics, and being responsible for oneself gets one ready for life. You can only believe that if you have never interacted with college students. Okay, first of all, college is just like the public education. You segregate people according to their age. People do not mature. I'm going to talk about this in depth in the future when I get around to my big series on the internet and how it's fucking people up. Right. Just like in school, how you're constantly surrounded by people your own age, public school, K through 12, you don't mature by interacting with people your own age and with your own experiences. You mature in your interactions with other people by interacting with people who are older and younger than you and learning how you have to relate and behave with older people, learning how you have to relate and behave with younger people. That's how you mature. Nobody in college is maturing, okay? I live on sophomore row. I live right next to CSU. I am surrounded by college students on a regular basis. There is no maturing going on. If you think that, there is something wrong with your brain. Probably you've never been on a college campus or been exposed to a college campus. You know, living with different people. Again, how are we defining different? Well, people with different skin color, because that's in a college, that's how different, that's how diversity, that's how that is interpreted. So you got a bunch of people that have different skin color, but they all think exactly the same as you. Okay, you don't mature just by being in a room with somebody who has different color skin or different sex organs. You mature by interacting with people who have ideas and beliefs that are different than yours, and those things are not tolerated on a college campus. Again, go to a philosophy class and talk about the non-aggression principle. You will be shut down. Go to an economics class and talk about eliminating taxes and tariffs and regulations and having a free market. You will be shut down. I took a poli-sci class. There was a guy in there who was a libertarian who tried arguing with the teachers for the first 2 weeks, and he dropped out because every time he said, wait, why is it okay for the government to murder people, she would tell him that, you know, she would dismiss him and keep going. Okay, if you have different ideas than the ones that are presented by the elitist fuckwads who run college campuses, you will be shut down. And then being responsible for oneself, yeah, good luck on that. Again, you don't know any college students. I do. All right, access to mentors. Most of us who went to residential colleges can name a professor or two were other advisors who played a role in shaping our life and perhaps still do to this day. While mentors exist in online classes, the face-to-face interactions on residential campuses are invaluable to the maturing process. Of course, to save money, many colleges are replacing full-time faculty with adjuncts who don't have the same time to make those personal connections. Okay, first of all, if your mentor is a fucking tax eater who works on a college campus, basically leeching off of stupid 18-year-olds who take out college loans and leeching off the taxpayers, that's a pretty fucking poor choice for a mentor. If you want a mentor, why don't you go out into the real world, find somebody who's actually successful at creating value for other people and can make money that way, or can survive that way? Because I don't necessarily make money. Because for example, somebody who is a Buddhist monk, and there are some Buddhists around here in Fort Collins. I know something, right? You can be, and I mean like the monk types, they live... I don't want to say it's a monastery, but it's like a Buddhist center or something. It's like there are people here in Fort Collins that's what they do. And they're not rich, but the thing is, they create value for other people through what they do. What they do is being a Buddhist. What they do is teach Buddhist teachings. What they do is they lead meditations. What they do is they talk with people about, you know, theology and whatever they talk about. I'm not being dismissive. I'm being serious. Okay. They create value for other people by being a Buddhist monk. They're not rich, as in wealthy. You know, they don't have a lot of money in the bank account, but they are creating value for other people, and they sustain themselves by doing that. That's just as valid and important as, you know, Bill Gates, who creates value by computer software. Okay, people who work on college campuses, the teachers, the professors, the dickheads on college campus, the elitists who are telling you that it's okay for you to go to foreign countries and pass judgment on other people and call them racist because of the things they say, those people are not creating value. I know you think they are, but if they're creating so much value, then why do the colleges need so much tax money to survive? Okay, anybody who survives on tax money, anybody who survives by having the state take money away from other people by force and then give it to them, anybody who survives as a tax eater is pretty much by definition not creating value for other people. Because if you create value for other people, people will give you things of value in return. You will not need tax subsidies in order to survive. So if you're getting your mentor from a college campus, then you have made a bad, bad choice for a mentor. Next, we have experiential learning. We know from research that students learn more and retain more when they apply what they hear in the classroom through experiences in real life. Not all colleges provide easy access to these experiences, but for those that do, students have the ability to volunteer in the community, work along scholars, and to do research and study abroad. Oh, you can work in the community. You know, you can do all of those things at a real job. By the way, when this thing mentions that 18-year-olds are not mature enough for real life, much less college campuses, because this ties in with that. Why are 18-year-olds not mature? I mean, they've had 12 years of public education. Why are they not mature enough to go out and get a job? Why should you pay $30,000 to go to a college and work along scholars and do research, alongside scholars and do research, when if you're fucking 12 years of public education actually did anything useful, you could come out of high school and go get a job working with scholars doing research and actually get paid to do that instead of paying to do it? I mean, all of this is an admission of what a pathetic fucking failure the public school system is. And then there's networking. We don't just remember the professors from college who had an impact on our lives, but the friends who were there with us during those formative years. Those networks shape lives in so many ways, from romantic relationships to jobs to new companies. Mark Zuckerberg might have dropped out of Harvard, but if you saw the social network, you might recall that Facebook would have never been if it had not been for Harvard residential experience while he was there. Ah, yes, because the social network is a documentary. You know, yeah, but if the only place you can make friends is on a college campus, then maybe you just need to get a fucking life. I mean, again, get a job, get some hobbies, get some interest, go out in public, talk to people. When you're talking to other people and they say something you don't agree with, don't immediately label them as racist because they have opinions that are different than yours, especially if you're in a foreign country. Try having a fucking open mind. Don't be so goddamn judgmental the way you were taught to be judgmental in college by elitist white people, okay? It's not that fucking hard to meet people and network. And hey, what about social networking? LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. I've met more people because of Twitter than I have because of pretty much anything else in any other one place. That and meetup.com. I mean, there's this whole new world out there that does not involve paying $30,000 to go to a fucking college campus. I was hanging out with a friend just yesterday. She goes to CSU, and she is talking about how the classrooms are shitty. I'm like, yeah, they were shitty when I was there. You know, there are no windows, and the heating sucks, and the cooling sucks, and people are all sick right now because it's winter, and you're packing. I mean, there are places in the world where you can interact with and network with other human beings that are not shitty-ass college campuses that have crappy ventilation and where everybody gives each other diseases. I mean, fuck. Of course, this campus experience shouldn't just be reserved for the children of Michael Bloomberg, but the fact of the matter is that the country's 200 colleges that are the most difficult to get into, only 15% of entering students in 2010 came from families with incomes under $65,000. Nearly 70% came from families with incomes above $108,000. At this rate, we're on the road to creating a two-tiered higher education system that will ensure we don't help foster the next generation of students like Michael Bloomberg. First of all, Michael Bloomberg is a statist. He is a mayor of New York. He is directly responsible for the murder of countless people. We don't want more people like Michael Bloomberg. Michael Bloomberg is a fucking piece of shit. Second of all, of course colleges are creating a two-tiered system. That's the fucking point of colleges. That's why they're run by elitist white people, is to create other elitist white people, and the few tick marks, the few tokens, the few minorities that get through there are indoctrinated to be just like the elitist white people, because the elitist white people who run colleges will not tolerate opinions that are different than their own. I have said this before. Other people have said this before. What we are going towards in the education system in the United States right now, if things don't change, we are going to end up with a two-tiered system where the rich people go to schools where there are real people teaching them, and all the poor people are going to be learning on computers. The solution here is, of course, to get rid of the elitist fucking schools. But that's not going to happen because the elitist schools are the darlings of people like Michael Bloomberg. As for the colleges admitting only people who are rich, only people who come from families with incomes above $108,000, well, where's your fucking tolerance? Where's your diversity? Where's your affirmative action? Don't you need some tick marks in order to keep getting your federal funding? I mean, what the fuck is up with that? If you people on college campuses are so goddamn enlightened, well, then why aren't you letting some poor people in? Oh, that's right, because you're a bunch of goddamn racist, stuck-up motherfucking shitheads. Because you're the kind of people who go to foreign countries and call other people racist for using their own fucking language because you believe you know more about their culture and language than they do. Not rocket science, okay? The college experience is not worth what you're paying for it. It's not that important, and as time goes by, it's going to become less and less and less important. And all this is some fucking old guy who is getting paid off by a college somewhere trying to, you know, keep the college experience alive and keep this as an important aspect of our society and something everybody has to do so that everybody goes to college and everybody takes out those loans and the banking corporations make a shit ton of money. Because when it all comes down to it, most of the college experience, and don't misunderstand me, there are some things you need to go to college for. Engineers should go to college, okay? Doctors should go to college. Nurses should go to college. There are some professions in the world where you should go to college. But the idea that everybody needs a college education is nonsense, okay? There are lots of people in the world who are able to create value for other people without going into debt for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 to the banking corporations. The college experience is all about the banking corporations making money. That and teaching you to be a fucking elitist, statist piece of shit who passes judgment on other people.